What do I hear?
Yes. Can you hear us now?
Oh, yes. I can hear you now.
It's radio, live radio. Something. Good morning. If you just tuned in, you got Criminal Justice Insider with Babs Rawls-Ivey and Jeff Grant.
Good morning, Babs.
Good morning, Jeff.
It's always nice to see you.
How nice to see you.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen you since your
birthday.
Since your birthday party.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that was something.
Although it was good, and I was so glad. I have the pictures. You and your wife look so beautiful.
Oh, so send them, please.
Yeah, I will.
Any pictures we look good in, we want.
I know.
That's the baseline, Babs.
Yeah, I feel you on that. Yeah. So, welcome. It's Friday, May 18th. We are here for another edition of Criminal Justice Insider. We are happily and lovingly sponsored by the Community Foundation of Greater New Haven.
Now more than ever.
And Family Reentry.
With Family Reentry's new tagline, by the way.
Yes.
Rebuild, restore, disrupt.
Oh.
How's
that's
that?
Really, really new.
How about that?
I like that.
Oh yeah, we're going back headlong into the into advocacy and thought and criminal justice leadership, and so we have a new consultant, and we're moving forward.
Nice, yeah? Nice, mm-hmm. nice. All right, so let's do a little housekeeping before we introduce our wonderful guest.
Absolutely, who's probably on camera already.
She is. I see her. She looks beautiful.
Absolutely.
So what's new? What's going on at Family Reentry these days? Give us an update.
Well, we got a few things going on. On January 9th, we are going to serve as the Connecticut partner to a concert that's going to happen in Western Connecticut.
You mean June 9th?
June 9th, sorry. June 9th, I apologize. Just only a few months off. And Nigerian musician and prison reformer Lamborghini.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be holding his first U.S. concert, and with the wonderful church congregation there in Northfield, mm-hmm. in Weston, and a bunch of other people who'll be there. He has a band from Bridgeport that they've recruited, and we are working with justice reformers, and it's going to be it's going to be outrageous. If you go to the Northfield.org website, that's Northfield Church's website. You'll see some of his concerts in Nigeria, mm-hmm. where he actually gives concerts and talks in youth prisons. And he's looking to raise money through his organization, SALT, to construct and fund libraries in youth prisons in Nigeria.
Okay.
So I think that's a worthy cause, and I'm happy to be involved with it, and so is Family Reentry.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of interviews. The interview I had on Both Sides of the Bars about a month ago is now online with the wonderful Khalil Cumberbatch of the Fortune Society interviewing. Mm-hmm. And I'll be on the Stan Simpson show on June 9th as well. And looking forward to that, spreading the gospel.
Good.
Yep.
That sounds wonderful.
And how?
That's good. That's good. That's mm-hmm. good. All right. I like hearing all these things that's going on in the world of reentry. And we try to keep up on top of that stuff and bring it when we do our show.
Yep.
Shout out to Andrew Kaplan, if you're listening. Hey, Andrew.
Hey, Andrew. Always nice to shout out to you.
Always nice.
Yep.
So our guest today is Jacqueline Polvari. Polvari.
Polvari.
Polvari. How are you?
Good.
I just know her as Jackie.
That's what I prefer.
With a Q-U-I-E.
Oh, yes. Very French.
So I got your little bio here. Let me shout some of this out. So Jackie is an experienced entrepreneur and professional with proven success in business and mentoring environments. Social worker for 10 years plus, partner in a large title company for 15 years plus, and a series, she made a series of poor choices that led her to her arrest and federal indictment. And with her husband and three children by her side, she entered into a plea agreement in which the federal government, to be sentenced for a year and a day. In September 2015, Jacqueline reported to the Danbury Federal Correctional Camp for Women, where she served 6 months of her sentence.
Actually, I served in January of 2015.
And so let me tell you how I know her. So I get this call from Norm Patterson, who was my attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, listen, this nice woman, this is what he said, this nice woman is about to go to jail. She's about to go to prison. And could you just go and talk to her and just like help her through this process?
Yeah.
So I was like, because Norma's my good friend. So I was like, yeah, whatever.
It was a mess.
And so I went and I met with her mm-hmm. and her and her husband, and we chatted for a good while, just getting her prepared. Mm-hmm. And she went and maintained and came home, and it was
okay. I survived it.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
your help.
She's here today to tell us her story.
Her story.
Yeah, my story. Quite interesting, I think. I actually was a social worker for a children's center, New Haven, for a long time, mm-hmm. and burnt out, went through a divorce, and had my little kids, so I decided to go into business for myself so I could be there for the kids whenever they needed, and started a small clothing company doing notary clothing work, which grew into a title search company, which grew into a title company, and it kept growing and growing over the years, and I made the cardinal business mistake. I hired family.
Ooh, yeah, we've talked about that one.
I hired all my family. My mother, my brother, my father, my aunts, my best friends, my husband, my new-to-be husband. Hired everybody. So as it was growing, I decided to take on a partner. Took on a partner who's an attorney, was an attorney. And we continued to grow. And I could not handle payroll. Payroll got to be out of control. And I wouldn't dare tell a soul. My husband says to me, I want to come into the office. He was a title searcher at the time. I want to work in the office. I think the office is wonderful. So I said, of course, you can come in the office and I can pay you a large salary. Knowing very well I could not pay him this large salary. Mm. So I woke up one weekend and went to work on Monday, and my business manager said, Jack, you know, we have no money to pay for payroll this week. That can't be. I mean, we're doing all this business. But we had commercials. I mean, we were really growing. I had commercials on. I had a loan officer in the building. We had everything. A one-stop shop kind
of thing. Where was this? New Haven?
Brantford. Yeah.
It
was in Brantford. And we had about, I'd say, 45 employees.
Wow.
At the time.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that is big.
Yeah, we were pretty big. Too big, I've learned.
That's a lot of family.
That is, well, when you're Italian, that's not even close to being a lot of family. I could have doubled that with one phone call. But we were doing, I thought, pretty well. But what I did was I went and tried to supplement and got a job as a loan officer with GMAC at the time. So I wasn't working in the business. I was working at GMAC, and I had a business manager running everything. And looked to me as if everything was going good. Obviously, if I had to take a job as a loan officer, it wasn't going so good to supplement my personal income. So I'm thinking, how am I going to get out of this? So I applied for a loan, small business loan, quickly got denied. Forget it. And I decided, well, I do have this house. I could take a loan out, refinance the house. Mm. But at the time, it was 2009 when all the mortgage industry was a complete mess. Mm. I said, well, there's not enough equity in the house to cover it. However, I am a title searcher. I talked it over with my partner and decided to refinance the house, turn in the title search without the first mortgage on it. Mm-hmm. Big mistake. It happened in 20 minutes. 20-minute decision, and lied on the application. And the funds were wired into our business account. We used that to make payroll for the next year. And what I was doing was paying my mortgage. So I'm thinking there's no harm, no foul. It's my house. I'm paying the mortgage. There's no loss. Then the mortgage crisis just blew up. Every attorney was in trouble who was doing loans. Paralegals were going to prison. And before I knew it, there was a knock at the door. Mm. I opened it, and Mr. Nice FBI man was there asking to look at my books.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, I knew. And I, you know, I wandered it over. Mm. The stress and the guilt. And let me backtrack a minute here. The house was in my husband's name, not my name.
Mm.
So I didn't even own this house. I forged my husband's name on this refinance.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't know about it. So
did he know about it at the time the FBI knocked on your door?
He did. I told him about, I had a little bit of a nervous breakdown over it. Mm. And I told him about it about 3 months prior. And I just, I couldn't even function. It was one of the, I always made real good decisions, real good decisions. So I'm thinking to myself, how can I make such mm-hmm. a poor decision over money and knowing that it was illegal? And so Mr. FBI man and I sat down and I immediately called my attorney and I said, I'm going to take full responsibility for this. Yes. It didn't. I think he was kind of shocked.
Wait, was this your business attorney, or did you know Norm by that point?
I didn't know Norm. I had a law office that was right across the hall from us. Mm-hmm. So he had been doing my will and mm-hmm. personal mm-hmm. stuff. So I called his office. It was Chuck Angelo's office. One of the best attorneys of it. He did so right by me. Mm. I can't even say enough about him. Mm. And he had gone out on his own. He's in East Haven, and he just... guide me through the whole taking responsibility. I had no intention of even saying, you know, how could you even at that time say, no, I didn't do this. So I said I did. I made a plea agreement. And then the guilt started rushing in mm. because I realized at that point in time, I didn't hurt myself. I hurt my family. Mm. And no matter what excuse I can give, it's not enough. Mm. You could sit there, and I think with white collar crime, and I don't like labels, but that's, you know, they call the financial crimes white collar crime. They that the devastation isn't violence, it's not robbery, it's the devastation is to your family.
Yeah,
because you get accustomed to living a certain way, mm-hmm. and then I have three kids. Shout out to my daughter, Maria, who is supporting me.
You can stick your face in if you want, Maria. No, you don't want to.
I'm not about that life.
She graduated last week, the bachelor's degree in criminal justice. So I'm very proud of her. She's going on to be a federal defense attorney. So I'm very, very proud of her.
So criminal justice degree. She must be a masochist as
yes.
well.
She is. But she was the best in white collar crime class. She got an A.
She's like, wait, I can tell you all about this.
Is that how to do or how not to do?
How not to do. Yeah. I was very forthcoming. I think a lot of my friends said, you know, don't tell your kids. Mm-hmm. The minute I pled guilty, I sat them all down. And I said, look, I mean, I have kids. I can't not plead guilty.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, what am I going to teach them?
Yeah.
You know, people make mistakes. We're not perfect. We're humans. And mm-hmm. the only way you can... I think define yourself is by how you handle the mistake. Mm-hmm. So.
Let me ask you a question I've never asked you before. For those out there who don't know, Jackie's a member of our white collar support group that meets online on Monday nights. So we see each other almost every Monday night, and we kind of counsel one another. Tim Askew, a columnist for Inc. magazine, wrote a series of columns about entrepreneurship and criminality and how closely related they are. Do you think that because you were an entrepreneur and were used to making decisions without a board of directors, for example, or checks and balances mm-hmm. and limited resources to have, you know, compliance officers and things like that, do you think that one kind of led to the other? How closely associated do you think that entrepreneurs always are on riding the line, to the extent that you know that?
I think he's absolutely right. I think as an entrepreneur, we have no one. We're not accountable to anybody but ourselves and our employees. Mm. And I think the pressure of performance for those employees is astronomical. Mm. And I know a lot of self-employed people. I know a lot of entrepreneurs. And I think I'd say 85 come very close to stepping over that line.
I think I would add to that because you know, I'm a white paper crime, white collar crime, but mine was in a nonprofit and federal money. I think the reality is that, you know, when you stand on the corner of desperation and opportunity,
I think that's
what it is. I'm not so tied to the entrepreneurial thing. I think when you stand on that corner of desperation and opportunity, meaning you find yourself in a desperate situation and all you want to do is get out of that situation and everything looks like the thing to do, even if it's not the right thing to do, it's a temporary sort of stopgap. And you think, I'll come back around, at least in my case, I'll come back around and I'll fix this. But right now, I immediately need to handle what the disaster is, or the problem, or the crises. I need to address it right now, and I'm gonna do this thing, and then I'll circle back around and fix it.
Well, a lot of it too is mental health issues.
Yeah.
I went to Danbury, and shout out to Danbury. I tell all the women that are listening, I know you're waiting to come home. I mean, these women, I tell you, I interviewed a lot of them, all the same issues. They're people pleasers. They don't know how to say no. They are control freaks. They take care of their families. It's one of those things where I'm a fixer. I mean, Jeff knows. Jeff's my mentor, actually, and he did a great job. And I'm a fixer. And my job was to fix it for my family. Mm-hmm. And not let them know there's a problem.
And so I think we have that. And I think that is the common denominator with the three of us. I really do. That, you know, we saw an issue and we just like, how can we keep this away from people? Mm-hmm. How can I handle it? Because we are handlers and fixers.
Yeah.
And then come back around and like, okay, we'll come back to this issue. We have to address this issue. And then.
Yeah.
You know, and then the cycle begins.
Yeah. You know, it's fascinating for me, Jackie, and having gotten to know you and you too, Babs, frankly, is that 98% of the people I work with are male, you know, and certainly in the white collar criminal arena, mostly male.
Yep.
And the males have kind of a common issue about being providers and having, you know, ego tied up in it. And I've asked them what the tipping point was, and almost all of them knew that they were right there on the tipping point, but they were afraid to go into the bedroom and confront their wife and be honest and say, listen, I'm in a place right now where I'm not capable of doing the things that I was capable of, or I'm being asked to do things that I know are ethically inappropriate for us, and it could lead us down a path. And 201, they are afraid to have that conversation because they're afraid their wives will leave them. And after having been, you know, so career oriented and narcissistic and treated their wives badly, many of them, they're afraid to have that conversation. And almost always when I interview the wives after, their wife would like nothing better than their husband, who they fell in love with, you know, many years before, just to be humble and come to them and just tell them the truth, and they'd be happy to simplify their lives.
Yeah, see, for me, it was different, though. For me, I was in a new marriage. Mm. So my husband was my best friend, and I don't think I felt the need. My need was to prove myself and to make my father proud.
Mm.
And I came from a big Italian family where we don't share a lot of our feelings. And I just wanted to be the one to make. I have two siblings who are fantastic, great people, and always succeed. And I wanted to be the one who stood up and got the degrees and, you know, got all the education. And then I proved myself, and I couldn't seem to ever do that. So the more I tried, the more I self-destructed myself.
Wow. Yeah.
So it was more about my dad than I think my husband at the time. And I wanted to prove to everybody a single mom can do it without a man. You know, I'm strong. I didn't need a man. I can do it with my kids.
Tell us, you mentioned the word self-destructive. So tell us about self-sabotage. Tell us what's going on there.
Wow. I've done that so many times, even since going into Danbury. You know, you know you're at that line, and you just have that complete self-destruction. You do it to yourself. I mean, we all do it to ourselves, whether it's weight related, whether it's money related, whether it's friends related. We all want the acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, it was the constant working. I mean, I worked 15, 16 hours a day.
Sure.
Never stopped. Just didn't stop because I just felt. And I was destructing physically. I was destructing myself physically. I was destructing myself mentally. And then the tipping point was then financially. Mm-hmm. So I slowly did it over, I'd say, about a year prior to me taking the mortgage out. I kind of shut down and started taking antidepressants. And I think once you start putting that stuff in your body, you just start, you know, going downhill after that.
Do you think that you didn't have the toolbox or the skills to exit this pressure cooker elegantly. There was no way that you could see that I can make a series of good choices here and get out from under all this pressure, and that the only thing you had left was self-sabotage.
Well, I guess if you talk about skill set, I had, that wasn't an option for me.
Mm.
For me, the only option was perfection. The only option was
succeeding. You know what? You know what, Jackie? That is a self-worth issue.
Yeah.
Because I get it. Because I understand you're struggling with, I'm good enough as everybody else. I can do this thing. I can. And so that's that's at the root of all of that kind of self-sabotage. Yeah. Feeling unworthy of whatever it is you have at this moment. And the idea of more would make me better. You know,
exactly. And I don't know what's worse. I don't know what's worse is the leading up, the stress, the complete pressure cooker, or the guilt that you feel after.
Mm-hmm.
Because the destruction that it did to my children.
Mm-hmm.
I have three amazing children that never left my side. I was honest with them. I've been pretty strict with them, but they never left my side. And I'm very lucky. A lot of women in my situation, I don't know about the men, but a lot of women in Danbury, they lose their husbands. Their husbands just take off, and their kids stop speaking to them, and they go on different paths.
So you in Danbury, tell us a little bit about in Danbury. And I know that you've talked to us on the support group call about how women would get served divorce papers while they're in prison, and tell us about that experience a little bit.
Yeah, you'd be online for a phone call, and at least once a day there'd be a woman on the call on the phones. There's three phones, 220 women in a facility that fits 160.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hallway. It's a tiny building. It's a hallway,
and your business is very public.
It's very public, and you're living under the hallway in this basement with these pipes over your head, and they're dripping. And but there's no locks. There's no locks on the door. It's a camp. There's no locks. There's no restraints. There's no movement times.
And I mean this. Fictionally, this was the prison that was, I mean, Piper Kerman was at this prison before you, right?
Yeah.
And so fictionally, if anyone's seen Orange is the New Black, this is the prison that they're referring to, even if they give it another name in the show.
Correct.
So how much does it actually look like or feel like what they show in that TV show?
Well, I think, you know what, Jackie, the camp is a lot different than...
I think she was at the FCI, right?
Yeah, she was at the FCI, so that's a whole different kind of vibe. Like, that's prison with the fence and the barbed wire and the whole thing.
My feeling on the camp is I think that they put these women up there, and I'm not jaded, because what happened to me saved my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it really did. It made me a better person, changed my mental health, stability. But they put these women up there and they forget about them.
Mm.
You know, they have one guard to 220 women.
Mm.
And these women aren't dangerous. Complete no minimum. I mean, it's low minimum, and they've run freely.
And a lot of them have already served a great amount of time, like 10, 20 years. And so now they're at the last leg of this thing.
Yeah.
And so they go to the camp because they're finishing up, or you have small sentences that doesn't require you to go to the FCI.
Yeah. And you have to understand, I mean, you're not there for free. A lot of taxpayers say, you know, it's costing us. But it cost my family $300 to $400 a month for me to be there.
Wow.
They'd have to put in something. You were making 17 cents an hour at a job. And my family had to pay my restitution while I was inside. So these are just the things that happened to your family. Mm-hmm. And now my husband, who was working for me, I was the breadwinner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was kind of opposite to you, Jeff. Mm-hmm. It's now he had to find alternate means, and he was using credit cards to send me $300 so I can talk to him.
Because
everything costs money. The phone, the email. You buy your own clothing. You buy your own shoes. Your toiletries. I mean, you got to buy your own toothpaste. They don't give you soap. They don't give you
Although now
stuff.
They just say you could, they're free now. But after
but they
the fact.
Yeah, feminine products, you know, all that stuff.
Were you on the Mac standard in there? Did you trade Macs?
Well, my hustle was sewing. So, I was a sewer. You know, I'd sew everybody's stuff up.
Yeah. My hustle was... my hustle was pseudo legal advice.
Yeah. my hustle was writing letters and reading letters.
Yeah.
So, oh yeah, yeah, sure.
But these women, I mean, they would do the community so much better on home confinement, mm-hmm. Doing community service, mm-hmm. earning money, paying the rent. It's not helping victims by putting these financial crimes. You put women in a camp and these victims aren't getting paid because the women don't have a job until they get mm-hmm. home.
No, but you do acknowledge that these were crimes of trust and so people feel mistrusted. There are victims out there, even if they're not so easily identifiable. Even if it's
absolutely, the victim should be made whole.
I mean, yeah. The erosion of our confidence in the for example, real estate system or the legal system. I mean, you know, nobody gets a free pass here.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And like for me, I mean, I'm paying my mortgage. I mean, I should. I mean, I don't believe anybody. Look, I did something illegal. I need to pay it. Mm-hmm. I totally believe in that. I mean, I took responsibility for it. And that will be the rest of my life.
Mm-hmm. So, Jackie, when you're in there, when did you know that you were going to be all right? Because the first day is stunning. The first day, I remember my first day. I don't remember so many days after that, but the first day was stunning to me. And that's when I really was like shook. I was like, oh, I am really here. And then after that, after I eased into it and people were so gracious to me, I just exhaled and I was like, okay, I got this.
You know what? It's fine. I knew I'd be okay the day you came to my house, Babs. And that was invaluable to me. And it really was. I couldn't have. I mean, my husband had me going to Krav Maga classes. You know, here I am. I never fought somebody in my life. And he's like, you have to defend yourself. And then Bab comes in and she says, girl. You need to worry about getting mail. And I sat there and I said, mail? And she said, that's so important. Everybody's got to send you mail. And I'm thinking, why is mail important?
Did you get a black belt before you went in?
I did not. I stopped going. Babs came over. I took two classes. That was it.
Because mail says that you have people on the outside that are concerned about you.
Exactly.
And you are less likely to be manipulated or taken advantage of. Because you have a support system.
Yeah, you're right, you know.
And that makes a whole lot of difference because people pay attention, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. let's face it, there are people in jail who are mass manipulators and opportunists, and they pay attention to, you know, the whereabouts and the movement of people. And so when you show people that, you know what, listen, she's got a whole support system in place. She's not going to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
For commissary, you know.
Well, I did everything you said, and I got through it, and I used the time to reflect on. I mean, I had so much guilt. I mean, I went to the psychologist twice a week. I had an immense amount of guilt, and what I did, I just was so. I could, and you can't take it back. You know, you make a mistake in life, and you can't go back and rewind the clock. So you just have to deal with your guilt and. I taught classes. I got involved in education. I taught the GED class. I taught an accounting class. I did every single thing. You said join everything. I joined everything. Every religion I know all about now.
but you were short from the day you walked in. So, I mean, you must have known, you know, I mean, you weren't doing 20 years.
Right, yeah. I mean, well, for me, when I sat in sentencing, I remember Norm Pattis sitting next to me and the judge said a year and a day. Now, I didn't know what a year and a day meant.
Yeah, of course.
And he whispered in my ear and he said, do not cry. And that was it. I didn't have to because my mother was crying. My husband, my kids God. Were. We all thought year and a day was, you know, everybody's time is, you taught me that. And everybody has their time in their own way. I didn't realize that it was 7 months. And then, but quite frankly, I really wish I just stayed in Danbury and not gone to a halfway house at all. But at that time, a year and a day means that you get good time.
Yeah.
If you get any time after a year, you get good time. Yeah. And if she had given me, she was very fair, very, very fair. And
who was your judge?
Janet Bond Archerton.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know her.
Yeah, she was very
New Haven?
Fair. New Haven.
New Haven, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when I got to Danbury, I self-surrendered the day Teresa Giudice did.
Mm-hmm.
And,
oh.
there were cameras everywhere. Oh. And I'm thinking, oh, geez, you know, why can't I can't even catch a break? You know, I'm going to get on camera because, you know, every car at the time, my husband had a black Pilot.
You know, Teresa, she's the Real Housewife of Jersey.
Yeah. So we self-surrendered this
Now, you were the Real Housewife.
I was the Real Housewife in my slippers and I'm, you know, terrified. And my husband had this black Pilot at the time. So it was pretty big. And we're driving in and there's cameras and I'm ducking down.
This,
like,
this was the same day?
Same day,
oh, my God. That's,
yeah, we... I never knew that.
Yeah. Wow.
at the head of where you pull into Danbury, all media.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, and then, you know, you get to the FCI and you check in, you do the horrible check in, and they say to you, they give you this big pouch of stuff, and they say, okay, you go up there, that's the camp. And I'm looking at them by myself. Yeah, you walk up the hill. And here I am walking up this hill crying with this sack. And I get to the top, and there's these women everywhere, and you walk in and you're standing there, and they don't tell you where to go.
No.
And this one Italian woman came over to me. She was such a sweetheart. She said, honey, you're new. And they could tell by your outfit, you know, have the bright green stuff on. And they know. It says newbie right all over it. And the women are very wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, they know. They know how to take care of you. And after the first day, I knew, okay, this is my reentry. This is my start.
How many minutes did it take them to give you a pair of shower shoes?
Shower shoes were, I think the first thing I got was a toothbrush.
Oh, toothbrush.
Yes. This wonderful woman, again, shout out to Heather, because I love her. She gave me.
Oh, really?
She was my bunkie, and she's in Connecticut, and she gave me a toothbrush, toothpaste, and shower shoes.
Yeah.
And I loved her. She was my favorite person.
It's amazing the level of kindness that happens with these women. You walk in there and they are so willing to just extend whatever they have to you. Yeah. I mean, because I toothpaste, toothbrush, stamps.
You don't even realize. But you know, the great thing is, and this is what happened to me. I lived for 7 months out of a locker.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned, you don't need anything else.
Exactly.
You know, I didn't need any of that stuff I thought was important. I didn't need, and to this day, I still have that guilt. But, you know, because we're still, the financial fallout is pretty heavy. But I'm so humbled. And I appreciate I appreciate my kids so much more than I ever did. I mean, my husband, I appreciate the things he did for me. Mm. And every weekend they were there.
Well, Dave's a great guy.
He is. Yeah. He's an exceptional.
We love Dave.
Yes,
he really
my
is.
Dallas. Listen, they sent me a Dallas Cowboy jersey. they sent me one. I was like, what?
This woman needs a jersey.
Oh, my God. I was like, America's, these are the coolest people.
America's team.
Yeah. They are.
There you go.
So if you just tuned in, you are listening to Criminal Justice Insider. I'm Babs Rawls-Ivey. I'm here with my co-host, Jeff Grant. And we are talking to the lovely Jacqueline Pulvari. This show is sponsored by the Community Foundation of Greater New Haven.
Now more than ever.
And Family Reentry.
Rebuild, restore, disrupt.
It's live streaming on Facebook. So go to New Haven Independent. You can see us on Facebook. There's three of us in little boxes. It's live streaming on newhavenindependent.org. Tune in. And you're listening to us in your car or mobile devices on 103.5 FM, WNHH.
Yay.
Got to do the little housekeeping. All right. So tell us about, you've got this new venture.
I do.
I want to hear how you got to this place of creating Evolution Family Reentry Services.
Yeah, and from prison, now you have a story that's about your redemption and how you're going to live life. Like, you know, go there for us.
I come out and I fortunately started Googling reentry. I found Jeff. And Jeff had a white-collar support group going on, and we called in people from all over the country. And I think it saved my life. I was a mess when I came home. I didn't know how to deal with the shame. I wouldn't leave the house. I wouldn't go to the Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts. And God, you know, I'm going to plug Dunkin' Donuts because I have to have my Dunkin' Donuts. You know, but I wouldn't go. I thought everybody knew. I didn't want to, you know, I thought people would look down.
It's like a spotlight on you.
Yeah, I had my neighbor calling me a felon and screaming at me and telling me to go in my house.
It's like the choppers in Goodfellas.
Yeah,
you know, they're following you.
And And, you know, because the media gets things wrong in the beginning. You know, I had a different couple of things that they got wrong. And so I found this white collar support group and I logged on. I said, well, I'm gonna do it. I got permission from my probation officer because you can't talk to other felons when you come out, which
is true.
It makes me sad because I needed that. I needed people who understood how I felt. Understood the shame, the guilt, the sorrow.
And that's very isolating when you cannot do that.
I
found it very isolating, you know.
My husband was wonderful, but he couldn't understand, just like I couldn't understand how it was to have your wife. I mean, as a man, have your wife away and not be able to do anything. I couldn't understand.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And this group, I met a bunch of real people. I mean, these guys were real. And I logged on and they didn't play games. They're like, Babs, you're the first real person I met. You know, when you came to my house and you said, I'm not going to sugarcoat this for you, honey. And Jeff was the same way. And it kind of reminded me, you know, he said, look, this is where you're at. And this is what's going to happen. And probation in the beginning was difficult. And then I earned my trust with them. Mm-hmm. And my probation officer was fantastic.
Did you have to wear the ankle bracelet?
No.
See, I did.
Yeah, I didn't have any of that.
You're talking about shame. Oh, my God.
Yeah, you can't leave the house. And you have to plug in. You have to plug yourself in at night. You know?
I hated going to play. I was like, oh, I don't try to wear bell bottoms.
Yeah, it's terrible. And so I started to try and tell my story, and I found that being transparent, and I learned this through Jeff, you know, and I found this the other day too. People that don't know about your situation will use it to their advantage to hurt you at every time.
Oh yes,
they really will. No matter how you should not be considered. Like I said, I don't like labels, but when you're a felon for life,
forever.
Yeah, forever. You know, people find out, and Google. You know, with technology today, there's no hiding.
Any given day.
Yeah, you know, my family always says, put it behind you, and I'm like, you don't understand. You can't. Mm-hmm. You know, I talk to somebody, they Google me, and then they say, I don't want to do business with you. I don't want to do that. You know. And because I made one mistake in 45 years, you know, it's isolating.
It is.
And I knew I wanted to help people because I saw I always loved social work. I mean, that's my master's, and I loved social work, and it's something that I always wanted to give back. And I figured my personality was always a fixer. So how can I turn this into a positive instead of going down another rabbit hole and continuing on a path that's not good for me? I mean, I was very lucky. I kept my title search. I shrank my title search company to, so I still do have my title search company. And I have to say, we're number one in Connecticut right now. And we have some great guys.
How many family members in that?
Two. And they are the best title searchers in the state of Connecticut. So they earned their rights.
Yeah, okay.
Very, very good. And I have to say, my brother, I always tell him I'm better than him, but he's better than me. Okay. mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I still have that. So I had that ability to still make a living. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, I have to be able to give back now because I was very fortunate. I'm one of the fortunate ones. I really am. And I don't know if some of that is the responsibility I took, but so I've talked to Jeff quite a few times. I put my story out there with Progressive Prison Ministries, and Jeff's got a great thing going. I tried.
Oh, that's right. You wrote that blog about your story.
I did, and I wrote the first blog, and Jeff called me up and he said, I don't think so. You need to be real. And this story you're telling isn't real. You need to go deep inside and be real, and made me rewrite it. And,
professor. I think pretending you were an Oxford professor was not going to do it.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly.
Well, I mean, I think Jeff understands that your salvation is really tied to your authentic self. When you stand in your truth, the truth is what saves you. It's really what pulls you forward.
Yeah.
And if you're gonna BS, then you're gonna stay stuck in that. You're gonna go right back.
Oh, it's freeing.
Yeah.
It is. Yes. That's your freedom, because I remember going back. I couldn't even remember. I'd lie, and then I couldn't remember the lies I told. Mm. So you know, now being transparent and the freedom of not lying is, you don't have to remember anything.
Yeah.
But that blog post you wrote was one of the most read posts that we ever put on prisoners.org. I mean, it was a... You heard from women all over the country, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I got a lot of feedback. Women started calling me and asking me how I dealt with it, how I did things. Mm-hmm. And Some women didn't like that you have to take responsibility, and that's okay. Everybody just thinks a different way, but my feeling today is with the women I help is, number one, you have to see yourself for the truth. Mm-hmm. The truth is you screwed up, and you know what? It's okay. Mm-hmm. We're human. We do screw up, mm-hmm. and it's how you handle that, and you make amends for that, and you continue to pay your restitution. You continue to do what's right.
And you don't have to stay in that story.
No.
Like, you don't have to be held hostage to the crime that you committed. I think that's what I figured out for myself, that nobody could keep me, no one could hold me hostage to that story.
Except myself.
Mm-hmm. Once I let it go, it's gone. Like, you could Google me all day and say whatever, but I'm not there. I'm not in that space.
See, I'm not at that place yet. I'm still, I'm waiting for that place, Bass.
But you are in radical acceptance of your reality. I mean, that's for sure.
I am. I just, I do, it bothers me when people throw things up. Yeah. You know? And I'm getting to that place where to realize that it is what it is.
You know what? You will, if you stay doing the truth telling that you're doing.
Yeah.
When people bring that up, you'll just let it roll off your back. Yeah. You know.
Yeah. I mean, I've done it with my company. I mean, all the people that work for me know my situation. All my clients know my situation. Mm-hmm. And I was a different person then than I am now. And so I decided to. I wanted a company that can really make a difference with reentry, because I always read that reentry starts the minute you walk into prison. Mm-hmm. And I didn't believe it. But now that I look back, it is absolutely mm-hmm. the truth. Mm-hmm. And so I founded Evolution Family Reentry Services. And the story behind Evolution is, my title company's name was Evolution.
Oh.
And I got in trouble with my company, with Evolution.
Kidding.
So
wow.
That's why I wanted to use the same.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it's kind of a circle for me. Yeah. And Evolution is change. And it makes a difference. And that's what it is. Mm. And so I decided to name it that. And our job is to help women and men and families come home mm-hmm. and reestablish themselves in a positive way mm-hmm. and understand that was them now before. This is you now, and let's help you get a job. And there's a lot of women that were accountants and lawyers, and so they come home and they say, I'm going to get that six figure. No, you're not. You know, you're not going to be an account. That was you then. You mm-hmm. you need to establish who you are now, and it takes a little bit.
I think it's hard for white collar folks.
Yes.
I don't want to say criminals. Yeah. White collar folks. Yeah. Because they, you know, you want to get back to get your life, but you can't get that life. Yeah. You got to get a different life.
Yeah. For me, I didn't want that life. Mm-hmm. I just didn't want it. I didn't like it.
And on the call, we say all the time that you live two separate lives.
Yeah.
And in many ways, they're not related to one another. Yeah. So you can live one life as a janitor, and then one life as a hedge fund manager, and you can understand why a hedge fund manager has a problem becoming a janitor. But I've never met a janitor who had a problem becoming a hedge fund manager.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's just the order that freaks people out.
It is, and for me, I think the shame was I did start applying some places, and the minute they find out you're a felon, they say forget it. So the shame of that, I couldn't bear that, and I decided to stay self-employed and do what I can, and we're doing pretty well. Mm. The women that are coming home, and I have a big push with families, because you know, my kids, luckily what I created in Danbury was a network for my kids to talk to other kids with their mothers there, and they did, and it helped them unbelievably.
You did that while you were in prison?
Yeah, while I was in Danbury.
Wow.
I connected my daughters up with some of the women's daughters who were around the same age. Mm. And now they were able to call up each other and say, hey, I had a bad day at school today.
Wow.
Somebody found out about my mom. And they, you know, they went back and forth.
That's really good.
Yeah.
It was a very positive thing. And especially because my little one who is here was still in high school. And but I have to say, her friends were phenomenal. Brentford was fantastic. The school system, they didn't. When I went into Danbury, she was a freshman in college and started. It started when she was middle school, right? Yeah, middle school, eighth grade. So,
but now you're leaning into services, actually providing on the ground, one-on-one services in reentry recovery for people who are hurting. And I know you've spent some time doing advocacy as well, and being an educator and speaking for women's prison issues. So, you know, how do you mediate both of those callings? And
well, family reentry is more of a we do have mentorship, and that's more on the social work, mental health side of it. And then we do have professionals now that are joining our network that are real estate agents, accountants, housing people, and financial people who are felon friendly. So we have real estate agents
that can
felon friendly, you know,
and, I like
and
that.
Because
felon,
you can't even you
felon
come,
friendly.
Come
on, yeah.
We're gonna get them a door decal.
Felon friendly, and they are, and employers that are felon friendly, and they realize, you know, that they can, you know, there's people that come home and you can't fill out a rental application get approved if you're come home from prison.
Sure.
These women don't have housing, so we have real estate agents that are looking and helping with that.
Wow, mm-hmm.
and
that's huge.
Yeah, and we have an accountant who knows the ins and outs and understands you've been to prison. Some of these women have tax fraud issues and haven't filed their taxes in years. And then we have another person who helps you get your license back, because you know, you lose your license, gets expired, and after 2 years you have to take the test all over
real
again.
Estate license,
no, driver's license. Yeah, your driver's license.
These women who've
been in prison for 3-4 years, their driver's license expires, and if it's more than 2 years, they have to retake the test.
Wow.
So now they're taking this, you know, the permit test and the driving test. So we have someone help them with that.
Wow.
And employment, which is a huge big deal.
Yeah.
And helping them with employment and so forth. And on the advocacy side, I really am working on trying to change the felon speaking to felon.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I love Mike Lawler because he tweets out every day the decline, and Connecticut is doing a fantastic job.
Mike Lawler's our next guest
he
here.
He is.
That's
right. My brothers grew up with him.
On June 1st, Mike Lawler will be here.
Yeah.
And I'll make sure I bring that up.
Yeah, bring that up.
We got to talk about that felon to felon conversation.
It's wonderful because, you know, our governor is very big into criminal justice, which is a wonderful thing that he's doing, but the federal side of things, not so much, because you know, you come home from federal prison and you have to talk to other women. I don't know, I'm not a man, but
same thing.
You just have to be able to have conversations if you're having a bad day. You know, I'll call you up, Babs, and say, Babs, this is what's going on. I'm feeling some shame today. And I had friends that I can't do that with. And they were friends of 30 years that just didn't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And
and they're supportive, but you know,
they are. They just
or not.
You know, my friends didn't want to talk about it.
Sure.
Some of them didn't speak to me because they couldn't handle their guilt in me being away.
That's the acceptance part of this. You know, you can't change other people. You have to change yourself.
Yeah, no. And that might have been a blessing, at least for me.
It was
the adversity that happened. You know, the it weeded out the field of folks.
Oh yeah,
who was Team Babs and Team Unbabs.
Yeah, a lot of uns going on in real life.
Well, you know, and you meet people that you would have never met before. I would have never met Jeff.
Yeah.
He's one of the best people I know, you know. And some of these other supporters that I have on
She sets the bar pretty low.
Yeah, right, yeah. Well, I have to say that I'm on, you know, he co-hosts the show.
Yeah.
Later, Babs, we'll have a conversation.
So Jackie, you know, what's the takeaway you want to leave people with, and how do people get in touch with you? Because we're almost at the end of the show. Go ahead.
The takeaway is, I think that people who come home need to look at a brighter tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
It will get better.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, they say the suicide hotline. It does get better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with felons. It gets better.
Mm-hmm.
Every day is better.
Oh, I'm here to tell you.
You wake up every day and you just, as long as you have to take responsibility and acceptance, you just have to understand who you were and who you are not.
Mm-hmm.
You can get in touch with me, Jacqueline at Evolution Family Services, evolutionfamilyreentry.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I am always willing to speak to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it is free of charge to talk to somebody, which would be me, and see where you're at. And especially, we have two psychologists now, and I have social work background, so we're very good with the mental health piece to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you have to start with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much, Jackie.
Wow.
Thank you for having me.
I was so thrilled you know, that you were coming on.
Yeah.
And that I get to see you because I haven't seen you in a long time. So,
yeah.
So it's very
nice. This is a great interview. This is a great conversation.
Good? I was so nervous.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't tell.
Yeah, we rate them after the show.
Oh, God.
All right. Thank you, Harry, for a wonderful
show.
We're about to jump out of here.
Yep.
Thank you, Community Foundation for Greater New Haven, for sponsoring this wonderful conversation today, and Family Reentry.
Yeah, of course. And love you, Babs. Wonderful
love you,
show.
Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. Bye, Andrew.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.